Welcome to Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. Good to have you with us. We're with you for the next 60 minutes. 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We'll try to get in as many tweets as possible as we'll hit on a variety of different topics over the next 60 minutes. The Giants coaching search has continued. We'll go over the latest candidate, which is Eric Studisville, the former assistant head coach, running backs coach of the Denver Broncos. Gil Brandt on NFL.com also had a very interesting article where he chose eight teams that have the likelihood of turning things around quickly heading into 2018, who missed out on the playoffs or had a rough season in 2017. The Giants are one of those eight. We'll go into what he said about the Giants. We'll also go around the rest of the league and look at some other intriguing candidates, and we'll get to your phone call. So a lot to tackle here on this program. Let's start with the latest coaching search, Paul, and six candidates now is the official list. Eric Studisville is the latest. He joins Steve Wilks, the Panthers defensive coordinator, Vikings offensive coordinator Pat Shurmur, the two Patriots coordinators in Josh McDaniels and Matt Patricia, and then, of course, Steve Spagnuolo, the interim head coach.
Yeah, Studisville's a guy who I knew when he was the running backs coach for Jim Fassel during the end of Jim Fassel's tenure with the Giants before Tom Coughlin came in. Very good guy. Knows his football. I always thought that he got the most out of the guys in his position room. And that's one of my primary qualifications for a guy on a staff is when you look at that guy's position, you say to yourself, okay, well, he doesn't have much in the room. What did he get out of it? Now, did he have all pros in the room and they were all pros? Or were they underachievers? Or were they just ragamuffin guys who all of a sudden wound up playing a heck of a lot better than everybody thought they possibly could? Now, that's your best assistant coach, the guy who raises the level of play from that room about three times better than anybody expected. Those are the kinds of guys you want. I thought the running backs, when Studisville were here, did what they were supposed to do. So I say he did his job. They were not underachievers in that room.
Tiki Barber had three consecutive 1,000 rushing seasons while
he
was the coach.
Now, the one thing you can say is that Tiki had fumbleitis during those years.
That's fair.
And it was not until Tom Coughlin came in with Gerald Ingram as the running backs coach that they cured Tiki's fumbleitis. In fact, I believe over the course of those three seasons, I want to say Tiki had over two dozen fumbles over those 3 years. That is a problem. You know, that's something that needed to be fixed. Now, again, maybe Coach Studisville tried to get him to fix it, and maybe Tiki wouldn't listen. That's certainly possible,
you
too.
You need to know that side of the story.
You do need to know that part of it. Now, I can only say this. That was talked about a lot when Tiki was here, and it was one of the reasons why earlier in his career he was not making the Pro Bowl every year, because he had the stats to prove it. But then the detractors would say, well, what about all the times he's putting the ball on the ground? He's fumbling 8-9 times a year. That's not a Pro Bowl guy. You can't be turning the ball over that many times during the course of the season. So it was only when Coughlin and Gerald Ingram came in that they sat Tiki down and said, hey, man, this is not going to happen or you're not going to play. Well, when he was threatened like that, that's when Tiki fixed it. And then he became a true superstar, a Hall of Fame caliber player, to be quite frank with you. So that would be the only thing that I would say that you could question from Studisville's time with the Giants, because in terms of just pure stat line, if you don't think about that turnover thing with Tiki, those guys who were there definitely fulfilled their potential and played as well as they should have, and he did his job with those guys. He was very, very well liked. Respectable guy, well-spoken guy, pleasant guy to talk to. And obviously, he's had a lot of experience in this league.
Oh, yeah.
He's been around a long time.
Yeah, and that was going to bring me to my next point, Paul. It's amazing to me. He's actually served under four different head coaches in Denver alone. He was under McDaniels, who he ultimately replaced, because he then became the interim head coach for the Broncos in 2010. Then he served under John Fox, Gary Kubiak, mm-hmm. and lastly under Vance Joseph.
And you and I both know that holdover assistant coaches are few and far between.
Yeah, because usually the staff turns over when a new head coach comes
in. You know, it's not impossible. Sometimes guys do get holdover. Sometimes guys come back for a second stint with a team. But to talk about a guy like Eric Studisville, who was able to stay in the same organization under four different head coaches, means he must have been doing something right, because that's a lot of people who usually turn people over and decided not to do so. So he obviously has something really strong going for him, that no matter who kept changing those revolving doors and coming into the operation, they said, we're keeping this guy.
And I think it also says something about how high the organization thought of him. Because normally what happens, and Dave Gettleman, Paul, even hinted at this during his press conference about whether or not he would recommend any of the assistants
right.
on the coaching staff to whoever is hired ultimately as the new head coach. And he said, there's a lot of good guys on this staff currently.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to at least advise them to consider that. So it's the same thing.
Give them a good look.
Correct. If you're John Elway, as new coaches have come into the Broncos organization, I'm sure they said, listen, take a look at Eric Studisville, give him an interview. It's worth keeping him on staff because of what he's done and the track record he's had. So it's not only to me what coaches have thought of him. I think it's also how the organization has held him in high regard.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. So we move on and we see what happens. I think that, you know, it's really telling to me, and I'm going to take this shot right now at the writers, because it needs to be said before we get to any phone calls. If you're to believe what's in the papers, folks, Matt Patricia, Josh McDaniels, these guys have both been cloned, and each of them are going to be coaching multiple organizations beginning in September of this year. Just let's get that out of the way. Okay, if you believe what's written in the papers, these guys are coaching multiple teams. Okay, and if that's not ridiculous enough for you, okay, go to the racetrack and bet on a race and take out a parimutuel on every single horse in that race, which you said to me earlier this morning, because there have been five different favorites for this Giants coaching job over the course of the last week and a half. Thank you, scribes. Thank you so much. Why don't you go to the delicatessen and tell the guy that you want to buy as many lottery tickets as he can print out of the machine. Just keep hitting quick pick, quick pick, pick quick, quick pick, quick pick, right? And until his big ball of paper runs out, okay?
Yeah.
Buy yourself 200,000 lottery tickets, quick picks, and see if maybe you win a dollar, because
that's a good investment, clearly.
That's probably the kind of value that these articles and stories have today.
Well, and you have to understand, it's the off season, and everybody needs something to write about, as I always say.
I get it.
So what you just laid out, Paul, and I agree with you, it's a very fluid situation. But just because it's a fluid situation doesn't mean that there's a great deal of stock and substance behind every single report that comes out. And I'm surprised. I mean, let's not forget, Bill Belichick is also coaching multiple teams right now, teams that are in the playoffs and out of the playoffs. And Nick Saban is also coaching college teams and professional teams as we speak right now, too.
And
let's not forget about those two.
And here's the best part of all of this, okay? Let's just say that somebody threw all that mud against the wall and a piece of mud stuck, and they were right that so-and-so was the favorite for the job. How do you know the guy's going to take it?
You don't at this point.
No,
I mean,
you
unless
don't.
You're his best friend and you've had conversations with him and he told you that the team offered him a gig, it's all speculation.
I mean,
at this point,
you know, Matt Patricia may be the favorite for the Giants job, but guess what? Maybe they're the first ones to call him when the Patriots are out and they offer him the job and he says, I'm not so sure. Because 5 minutes later, after he hangs up the phone, he gets a call from another team and decides he's going there. I mean, I remember in 1993, the Giants hired Dan Reeves. He was their third choice. Okay, I know a lot of you folks probably aren't old enough to remember, but first choice was Tom Coughlin. He decided to stay at Boston College in 93. All right, he was building a really good program there. He decided to stay. They went to Dave Wannstedt, who was a Cowboys assistant at the time.
Went on to be a head coach of the Bears.
He took the Bears coaching job. He turned the Giants down. Their third choice was Dan Reeves, who wanted the job, so much so that he had Frank Gifford call Wellington Mara and put in a good word and frame of reference for him. And I remember Dan at the press conference joking, well, I'm the third choice, but I'm the last choice, and that's the most important one of all.
Yeah, you got the gig at the end
of the day.
He got the gig. That's what matters, yes.
So you know, it's laughable. The stories that are in the papers about so-and-so is the favorite. On so many fronts, those stories are laughable. You're better off buying a Batman comic book at the corner 7-Eleven.
So the lottery ticket and the Batman comic book. I'm just keeping tally of what you need to purchase so far at the local delicatessen.
Because you're going to find out more facts doing it that way than you are reading the stories.
That's what I said. You know, it's the offseason. The Giants didn't make the playoffs. They've been speculating about the draft for ages. So this is the latest story that's going to provide content. So it doesn't surprise me that that's the content of the majority of these stories. But let's also face it, Paul. Ever since Dave Gettleman was hired, Steve Wilks was almost tied to him at the hip, based on a lot of the media reports, given the fact that, you know, listen, the NFL is about relationships, and there's validity to that, Paul.
Yes,
and
there is.
And this is where I will agree. If people want to start to speculate, you always look at, well, who does that individual, who does that coach have an established relationship with? It always happens that people turn to individuals that they know, that they trust. So that shouldn't surprise anybody that when Dave Gettleman got the job, everybody started perusing the Carolina coaching staff under Ron Rivera and was saying to themselves, well, who's a viable head coaching candidate? Because you think Gettleman would turn to somebody that he worked with over the last 4 to 5
right.
years.
Right, which is why at some point really soon after the Giants head coach has been announced, you will probably see a story somewhere along the lines of Mike Shula, who was just fired as the Panthers' offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
You are going to see stories that will attach him here.
Of course.
You know that's going to happen, even though there may not be one crumb of validity
of
to
course.
It.
Of course, or there was
you
no conversation.
You know that story's going to happen. Mike Shula to the Giants.
Exactly, yeah. Well, there was also a lot of chatter about, you know, they were putting coaching staffs together for some of these candidates. Nobody's been hired, but already starting to speculate.
Yes.
And a name that's been thrown out a lot. Now, based on the latest reports I heard, is that Carolina is talking to North Turner to serve under Ron Rivera as the new offensive coordinator to replace Mike Shula. Now, why do you think Ron Rivera is turning to North Turner, Paul? Relationships. North Turner was the head coach of the San Diego Chargers,
right.
Hired Ron Rivera as his
right.
defensive coordinator. That's what the NFL is all about. It's so vast. There are so many coaches, but a lot of these people, they know one another from working with one
now,
another.
Now, see, let me make something clear. I know that the papers have to sell papers, and they got to get their clicks, and the guys got to write stories. I understand that, but what would be wrong with the philosophy of simply updating people on who's been asked for permission to talk to who? Talk about, okay, this is the guy who they've talked to. He's come in like the Giants on Giants.com.
Go over the ins
They're
and
simply
outs of
saying,
the candidate. Yes.
This is the guy. Here's his resume. These are the things that he's done or qualifications. These are some of the positives we've heard about him. These are some of maybe the negatives we've heard about him or questions that we still don't know. This is how he fits into the box that Gettleman and Mara have talked about. And that's really all you need to do. You don't need to be rehashing the same story for 7 straight days and just change one line. Oh, today, Joe Smith is the favorite.
The front runner.
And then tomorrow, Bart Jones is the favorite. And then the next day, Dick Small is the favorite. I mean,
going to start bringing people back from the dead.
It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. You know, there's just no reason to do that.
Yes.
State the facts and move on.
I tell you, the names you come up with, Paul, I'll leave it at that.
I'm sitting next to you, Lance. They just seem, some of them seem very natural.
4-5-1-3. Yes, Small and me go hand in hand. I will give you that. All right, let's go to, I lost my train of thought. I can't even get over some of the names he thrown out. But let's go to Gil Brandt's article, and then we'll open up the phone lines at 201-939-4513. So an interesting article on NFL.com, and it's entitled, and I'd advise you to check it out if you want, Texans, 49ers, Buccaneers had 2018's worst to first candidates. It's written by Gil Brandt, who's an NFL media senior analyst. And if you scroll through the list, after Houston, San Francisco, and Tampa Bay, those are his top three. He has the Giants as number 4. Then he goes on to write Denver 5, Cleveland 6, the Jets 7th, and he rounds out his top 8 with Chicago. Now, we're going to focus, obviously, on the Giants. His rationale, Paul, that
right
he
ahead.
Goes into, he talks about the youth movement, Sterling Shepard and Evan Ingram, promising. Shepard's had 2 seasons, Ingram's had 1. He mentions that they still need offensive line help and they need to get the running game going consistently. And then he also makes a case that Eli Manning still has good football under him, or ahead of him, I should say. And he actually says that, you know, Eli deserves a little bit credit in the athleticism department to remain durable and be able to continue to run this offense. So,
yeah.
I mean, I think he throws out and makes a strong case. But I will say this, Paul. I mean, we can certainly stick to the Giants. You can make a great case for just about any NFL team to turn things around quickly. And the reason why you could do that is, and I had actually an exchange on Twitter with somebody who is also extremely hopeful that the Giants could turn things around next season. And I said, listen, the NFL is defined by parity. There's not a great deal of space between most NFL teams. Even if you want to super analyze the teams that made the playoffs and the teams that missed it, you know, sometimes all it takes is one great free agent class, one great rookie class, and then in the blink of an eye, you know, you can all of a sudden get back to the playoffs. I mean, case in point, look at the Giants. Look at the 2015 Giants or the 2016 Giants, Paul. What was the difference? Why did the Giants go 11-5 versus what had transpired the previous season? Now, they won a lot of close games. I'll give you that. So you need the ball to bounce your way. But they also were very aggressive on the free agent market to shore up that defense, and it translated to the football field. And all it took was one offseason.
You call it parity. The league calls it parity. What do I call it?
You call it the quicksand of the NFL.
The quicksand of mediocrity.
Mediocrity, excuse me. See, I wanted you to use jargon. I didn't want to take it away from you.
Which is why you can get worst-to-first scenarios.
Absolutely.
Which is why, by the way, the Jacksonville Jaguars, who won three games last year.
And now division champs.
Need I say any more?
No, you could use plenty of examples. Eight teams, by the way, that missed the playoffs last year are in the postseason this
right.
year. So that's all you need to know.
And for those of you who question about rebuilding an offensive line so quickly, the Vikings rebuilt their offensive line with three guys this year. They signed two free agent tackles, right and left, drafted a third-round center, plugged all three of those guys into their starting lineup opening day, and with three new offensive linemen, three, they're a top-two team in the NFC. How about that? So, no. Don't tell me that the Giants have to blow it up, have to get rid of Eli Manning, and have to go through a 3- and 4-year rebuilding program. Don't even go there, because other teams in the NFL have proven that you don't have to. So why should the Giants, when they've got a 2-time Super Bowl MVP quarterback who is still able to wing the ball downfield?
And I'll keep pointing to the track record and the trend of the NFC East, Paul. I think it's another fair factor to bring up. There's a reason why we have not seen in the NFC East back-to-back division champs since the Eagles in the early 2000s. Why do you think that's the case? I mean, it's not just, oh, well, you know, teams just quickly all of a sudden lose all their talent. It's that these teams are beating each other up, and what you're seeing is new draft classes, new free agent classes are coming in every single season, and that's why these teams are able to turn things around so quickly.
Look, I don't enjoy the quicksand of mediocrity. I've made that very clear. It's a very critical remark by me because of the climate that the NFL has established. But having said that, it is what it is. You have to play with the realities that you're dealt. And the realities that you're dealt allow for these things to happen. Back in the 70s and 80s, forget it. You're not getting a bunch of teams going worst to first. You're not getting a 3-win team winning 10 games the next year. It's not happening. In the 70s and the 80s.
Well, there was also no salary cap. So I think that has
free agency,
changed drastically.
Salary cap.
The landscape, yeah.
You know, everything changed. Everything changed. So in today's league, what we're talking about, I grant you, it's against everything that I grew up with. But play by these rules. And you know what? You can turn it around right away. Do it.
I think there's ample evidence across the NFL. It's not whether or not you have an overwhelming confidence of the Giants necessarily going from bottom to first. It's the fact that there's enough examples across the NFL that it's not a stretch to say that one offseason could drastically change the outlook of a team. All right, let's open up the phone lines. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Tony's in D.C. He gets us going. What's happening, Tony?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for making it, Tony. What do you got for us?
Three quick things. Yesterday's show was awesome. Boy, that was a great show yesterday.
Great.
Second thing.
Thank you.
Yeah. You and John, you know, that was a great show. Second thing, and guys, this is scaring me to death. My favorite player is Landon Collins. If you told me that OBJ is a slightly better player, okay, maybe OBJ is the best player on the roster, but Landon Collins is my guy. Boy, has he been chatting to the media these last 2 weeks. We got to get a coach in here. Because this is scaring me.
Did you see Landon Collins on the megacast?
For Alabama.
Did you see it?
Yeah,
That was funny.
I saw it.
When they won that game in overtime with the touchdown pass down the left sideline, Collins lost it.
Which is understandable.
He went sprinting onto the field and jumped into the pile in the end zone of the winning Crimson Tide. Yeah. It was hysterical.
It was. Look,
if only Howard Cross did that, that would take
that's
it to another level.
Fluker and Thomas, because they're Alabama kids. But yep. we got to get a coach here, because my guy, he's getting frustrated. We got to get a guy in here for my guy Landon. But so here's my third point I want to bring up, and I want to get you guys take on this. Another fan says this. So yesterday, what John was saying about Davis Webb, because no one has a personal dislike for Davis Webb or a like for these other quarterbacks, so we don't know him. But what John was saying is that Davis Webb, after Eli, has to be the best quarterback on the roster, not the only quarterback on the roster. And that's what a lot of people – and that's all that people are getting at. But I want to put another point, to add to that. There are normally always 6 or 7 teams looking for a quarterback, whether it's the Bills, the Jets, the Broncos, the Browns. There's always 6 or 7 teams always looking for a quarterback. But what we have to keep in mind is that teams that haven't been looking for a quarterback the last 15 years, like the Giants, the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Chargers, the Cardinals, all these teams that haven't needed a quarterback, they're all getting older. The Patriots, they're going to be retiring in the next 2 years. So the amount of teams looking for franchise quarterbacks is going to double, maybe even triple in 2 to 3 years. So I just want fans to keep that in mind. It is not like you can just pass on a quarterback and get one next time. That is not how it works. Remember the 90s? If he's there, we got to take him. It's only going to get harder. Carson Wentz is the best player in our division. It just is what it is. If he had stayed healthy, he'd be MVP, and we'd be looking at a different outlook for what's going on.
He could still be MVP, even though he didn't stay healthy. But
yeah.
that's a whole other note.
But a lot of Giants fans, we were spared from having to watch Carson Wentz hoist up that MVP trophy and compete for a Super Bowl. So we got to remember, we got to deal with this guy for the next 12 years. Forget the Super Bowl. Let's win the division. Let's do that. So as far as turning it around quickly, I don't see how. When you need linemen, linebackers, and a whole new special teams, maybe I'm willing to stay positive. But if there's a franchise QB there, to me, it's a no-brainer. It's a no-brainer.
Well,
thanks, guys. Love the show.
I understand that, Tony, and appreciate
Thank
the phone
you.
Call. But I always go back to this point. Everyone within the front office has to feel that way. It's easy for a fan to say this kid's a franchise quarterback. If the front office is not on the same page, Paul, meaning Dave Gettleman and his scouting department, if they're all across the board, then I don't think it makes it sense in that purpose to then go after a quarterback at number two.
Look, I'm a big George Young guy. But George Young invested a first-round pick by drafting Dave Brown out of Duke with the supplemental draft. And he believed, in his heart of hearts, he was going to be the heir apparent to Phil Simms. So when a caller calls up and says, I don't want to go through the Darth of the 90s, going through quarterback problems, well, why do you think you had those problems? It was because the Giants used the number one pick on Dave Brown, who was a bust. Okay?
Which means you're not guaranteed to have a franchise quarterback even if you pick number two.
Exactly.
That's the point.
So go ahead. Pick the quarterback number two. Have him turn out to be a bust. And then call us back in a couple of years and tell us how you got to get a new one because you've really put your organization in a hole. I mean, you got to be able to play that coin both ways. Yes, did it work out with Eli Manning? Sure it did. Ernie, of course, he was all in on Eli. He decided he had to get him. He got him, won 2 Super Bowls with him, awesome. But everybody who says the Giants have to draft a quarterback at number two, they're forgetting 2 things, and they must acknowledge the other side of the coin. Dave Brown, number one. Number two, if you trade the pick and get a boatload of picks, it helps Dave Gettleman enhance his odds of getting this team back on its feet quicker. Because he will have more bodies to grab and fill more holes that are on this roster. You cannot ignore the other side of that coin, folks. And that's the problem is the quarterback people, they don't see it any other way. It's only heads and heads on both sides of the coin.
Well, the reason I think a lot of them feel that way is, and I will admit this, if you look across the NFL landscape, it's fair to say, Paul, that you will improve your chances of finding a franchise quarterback if you use a high pick on
the
quarterback. I don't think anybody's going to disagree with that. But here's where I'll counter. To say that that's the only script that you can follow to find your quarterback is extremely misleading. The percentages can be high, but there's also a way to sign a guy in free agency who may have been drafted by another team and then develop him. Trade for a quarterback that was drafted by another team and then develop him. I mean, I'll give you an example. Now, I know I'm going to get probably a lot of Twitter responses.
The Chiefs did with Alex Smith.
Alex Smith is an example. That's perfect. Saints signed Drew Brees in free agency.
Sure.
Okay, there's another one. But I was going to go for – I want to go for a lesser one.
The Giants picked up Kerry Collins years ago.
Kerry Collins.
They picked up Kurt Warner.
Kurt Warner is another one. I was thinking of like a Matt Schaub. Okay, if you remember, Atlanta drafted him, Paul, and then Houston acquired him. After he had a few years in the league, he wasn't playing.
Drew Bledsoe.
Bledsoe is another one. So what I'm saying
is
there's a variety of ways that teams have found quarterbacks. Now, have all of them gone on to win Super Bowls? No, but the point is it's very hard to win a Super Bowl, number one. Number two, you want at least somebody that's going to provide stability at that position. There's a lot of teams that have acquired a quarterback still at a young age and then have, with their coaching staff, been able to develop that quarterback. So I don't think that's a stretch, and that could always be an option without necessarily banking on using your number two pick to solve that position.
And again, the Giants have a real prospect at quarterback sitting on their roster right now. It's not like Rhett Bomar is behind Eli Manning, and it's like, oh,
it's
you know
seventh
what?
Seventh round pick or a flyer.
You really
like that. Yeah.
Need a number two this year. You need a guy with potential. Rhett Bomar is not going to be the future of this team, okay? Ryan Perilou is not
going
to be the
oh,
future
really
of this team.
Offense, yeah.
Right? But no, they got a guy already. It's ridiculous.
And that's part of the evaluation process. The new coach and the new GM, they're going to have their own perspective of Davis Webb.
Which, by the way, is the one small asterisk, which I do acknowledge the other side of the coin. If Dave Gettleman says, I'm all in on one of these quarterbacks and I have to have him, then I trust Dave Gettleman. I'm going to have to bow back to him and say, Dave, you made your pick. I hope it works out for you. I don't see the logic in it. I may not agree with it. But if you say so, we're just going to hold back, and we're going to do the Kansas thing. Wait and see, right? The wait and see state?
Yes.
Or Missouri? Is it Kansas or Missouri?
You know, it's I've heard that phrase
and we're just
so
gonna,
often.
And we're just going to have to wait and see.
Now you're testing my knowledge of geography here.
But that's certainly not the way that I would go. But I would at least be quiet and defer to the GM if he really feels he's got to go that way.
Let's head back to the phone lines. We check in with Victor in Florida. Vic, what's happening? How are we doing, Vic?
Yes. Before I ask the question or make a comment, I want you guys to know that I just sent you both an eggplant parmesan.
Oh, really?
UPS overnight, okay?
I hope it stays okay.
Anyway, my question is this. Number one, I will never draft a quarterback for the second pick, okay?
Right, right.
I would definitely go with Saquon Barkley because the Dallas Cowboys proved it. They got Ezekiel Elliott, and the same year they went to the playoffs. Am I right or wrong?
Yeah, but they also had an offensive line.
Yeah.
Let's not forget about that, Vic. That's the difference.
Yeah, okay.
The Jacksonville Jaguars.
Say,
well, no, Vic, I'll let you continue. I'll let you continue, Vic. But the other point I wanted
to
make.
Vic, it doesn't have to be great, but a good offensive line.
Vic, let me continue, and then I will let you make your point. Leonard Fournette was taken high by the Jacksonville Jaguars. Had an offensive line. So for every Ezekiel Elliott and Leonard Fournette, there's also Trent Richardson. Let's not forget about that. Mm-hmm. Now, Trent Richardson did not have an ideal circumstance with Cleveland, but also never panned out.
I think Barkley is unique, he's dynamic, and I think he's even better than Ezekiel Elliott.
Vic,
good offensive line, he could do miracles.
Vic, I think the only way that you can make a case for drafting Barkley at two, and he's a sensational talent, and I agree. I think he's going to be really good. But if you do not fix that offensive line, you've wasted the pick because he's not going to be able to do everything that you ask him to do if he's running behind guys who aren't giving him room to run. It's just that simple.
I understand perfectly, okay? But, you know, I believe if they have a good offensive line and with this guy running, because Gallman, I like Gallman, but he's got fumbleitis. He's proven it in college, and he's proven it in the NFL. So that's my view on things. I appreciate your taking my call. Have a great day, and enjoy that eggplant parmesan, okay?
Thank you, Vic. Appreciate it. I want New York football fans to remember this name from Penn State, Blair Thomas, first-round draft pick of the Jets many years ago. Not the same talent. Please, let me make this very clear. Not the same talent, not the same skill set. There's no question Barkley's a much more dynamic player, much more explosive player. The point is, when the Jets drafted Blair Thomas, he was a blue-chip, can't-miss prospect coming out of Penn State. Their offensive line was a disaster, okay? So they draft Blair Thomas. Horrible, horrible decision on their part going in. I couldn't understand why, because I said, this guy's going to get so beaten up. He's not going to have room to run. But on top of that, he's going to get his eggs scrambled virtually every week. They will shorten his lifespan. He's going to wind up on IR more than he's going to play. Well, what happened? Blair Thomas is one of the great Jet busts of the last 30 years because he was not given the appropriate offensive line to work behind. That's what you're going to have with Barkley, unless there is a part B that says we're going to give him the appropriate line to work with.
Well, it's the same thing with a quarterback. David Carr went to the Texans. He had no offensive line. It completely changed the course of direction of his career. So it's not just the running back.
And he admits that, by the way.
Of course he does. I mean, it's been well documented. I mean, that's why when Derek Carr was drafted by the Raiders, he wanted to make up for the struggles that his brother had to deal with. What I will say is I agree with Vic's point that I do think Saquon Barkley is a dynamic type of player that can make nothing into something. He has that ability. But that doesn't mean that he's going to do that on every single play. That's where it gets misinterpreted.
The NFL.
Correct, where the defenders are stepping it up a notch, a little
Absolutely.
Bit more physical. You can't assume that all the dazzling plays he made at Penn State is automatically going to translate to the
They're
NFL.
They're not.
And that's why I think people are watching what he does at Penn State, and they're like, oh, well, he didn't have great blocking, and he takes three defenders, he runs in and out of traffic.
There's
and
a
then
reason
takes
why
a
they're
touchdown.
Called professionals.
Absolutely. Well, and that's why you have to establish that, and you have to make that known that what you see on film in college doesn't automatically become what is going to come to fruition in the National Football League. So that's why I'm a little bit leery of everybody saying, well, if he could do it there, it could continue to the National Football League. I wouldn't necessarily read into that. That, I guess, is my big point.
Read what you got on Gallman, because I've been very critical of his butterfingers over the course of his rookie season. He definitely had some trouble holding on to the ball. But go ahead. Why don't you read some of those numbers?
What I wanted to find was, because Vic brought up his fumbleitis at Clemson, I wanted to see how many fumbles. Off the top of my head, I don't remember what his issues were, if they were an issue at all. But this past season, he had 3 fumbles with the Giants in 13 games, and he lost 1 fumble. I mean, Claire, listen, you want clean football by anybody. I don't know necessarily if I would go so far to say that this is going to be a reoccurring issue. When you make assumptions about a player after one season, I think you're going a little too far, in my personal opinion. If Gallman has issues in the next 2 or 3 seasons, then I think we got more of a track record to judge and say a player has an issue holding onto the football. When you've seen him 13 games and he wasn't technically a runner in all 13 games, 3 fumbles, 1 lost, I think we're going a little bit too far at this point to label him as somebody that has issues in protecting the football. I have not been able to find his Clemson numbers. I don't know if we get to that over the course of the show. I'd be interested to see whether or not that was a problem at Clemson.
I had done this research prior, and it was not. And here we go. Let's see here.
Because I looked at College Football Reference, and I did not see his fumble numbers on there. That's why.
Here we go. Fumbles.
Got that column.
In 2016, Wayne Gallman fumbled once in 232 rushing attempts and 20 receptions. So that's 242 touches and, I'm sorry, 2 fumbles.
All right.
That's not a problem.
No, I don't think that's a problem. Do you have 15's numbers as well?
We'll
just out of curiosity.
We'll look at 15 as
well.
This in midseason, and it came up not being a problem. Fumbled 3 times in 2015, 283 runs, 21 receptions, so that's over 300 touches, 3 fumbles. That's not an epidemic.
No, not at all. So that's why I said you have to take that into consideration. Now, did he have nearly as many touches this season? No. He had 111 carries, and he had three fumbles, but he also had, in terms of receptions, 48 targets, 34 catches. So he had about 140, 150 touches
and three
in total.
As opposed to
what
Clemson.
We saw in Clemson, where he had about double the amount of touches and the same amount of fumbles.
It was a problem this year. Nobody would disagree with that, and that's got to be cleaned up. He also had a few drop passes as well. So he's maybe it was a deer in headlights thing.
Well, that's what I said. Let's see what happens next season before we start running with these narratives.
I'm not ready to medically proclaim him as having fumbleitis.
Yes. Thank you, doctor. We will hold off on the medication subscription until a later date. Dave is in Connecticut. Dave, what's happening?
Hi.
Hi.
How we doing, Dave?
I'm good. I'm in Bluetooth in the car. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. Absolutely.
All right, cool. Hey, my question is about Eli Manning and whether it's more or less possible for him to be traded. But before I get into that, I do want to say I think Wilkes is personally my preference for coach. And, you know, going back, everybody's calling about Barkley and, taking him number two. And I feel we are an offensive line away from a championship team with Eli Manning. Having said that, I don't know if that offensive line can come into fruition this year based on multiple factors of two of our best guys possibly going to get better offers in free agency. Flowers is still going to be here. I hope that Chad Wheeler can really develop into a quality left tackle. But in my mind, related to Barkley, if we did take him, you look at Todd Gurley having a great first year behind a good offensive line. Second year, bad offensive line. Numbers go down. They rebuild the line. He has a breakout year. To me, having that type of dynamic back would be quite a monster to have OBJ outside and a quality running back. Having said that, going back to Eli, I look at Jacksonville and with Blake Bortles, and I don't know how this next game will determine, but there's no way they're not really – I would consider them seriously interested in Eli Manning. I love Eli Manning, but where we're at with what we're going to need for salary cap in the future, I know Eli can still play. I would love him on the team, but for the benefit of the team in the future and the possibility of Eli getting a championship over there – to me, it makes sense. So I just want to know what you guys think of that possibility, if that seems like a direction we would go to turn over a new leaf.
Well, appreciate the phone call, Dave. Thanks so much for weighing in. I mean, we've heard that speculation going back to the trade deadline because of the ties to Tom Coughlin. I mean, number one, Eli Manning has a no-trade clause, so he has to approve and want the desire or showcase the desire to want to pursue a trade. That's number one before you even start to speculate beyond that. So he has to be willing to say, you know what, I don't want to be here anymore. I want to go here, try to work out a deal. That's the first challenge, the first obstacle that you have to overcome. You know, the other thing that you have to take into consideration, even if the Giants are thinking about the future, Paul, there is value in having a veteran quarterback in-house to mentor and guide some of the younger prospects that you may ultimately hand the reins over to. And that doesn't mean that you're telling Eli Manning, we're not going to use you as the starter in 2018, but you also are saying, you know what, by Davis Webb being in the film room with Eli Manning, if they draft a rookie, there's going to be something that is going to be valuable from the perspective of the young player that they could take with them for the remainder of their careers.
I don't think there's any question in my mind, even if they take a quarterback at number two, Eli Manning is starting in September.
Yeah, no
There's
doubt
no
about that.
There's no question in my
Absolutely.
Mind. And again, caller, I know a lot of folks don't understand the economics of the game, but the Giants are going to get hit with a $12.4 million dead money
factor.
Cap hit if they trade Eli Manning. $12.4 million in dead money. Teams in this league don't do that. Now, the only reason that happened with Osweiler to Cleveland was because Cleveland had so much cap room that they could afford to do it, and they wanted the number two pick as part of that trade. It just teams don't do that. That's ridiculous. The amount
happens
of dead
more
money.
Likely in the NBA, where teams are willing to take on salary
yes.
because they can absorb it under their cap. It's unlikely that that happens in the National Football League.
The least expensive way for the Giants to part ways with Eli Manning, if they were going to, would be to declare him a post June 1st salary cap cut, which means he is 6.2 dead money in 18 and 6.2 dead money in 19. Now, do you honestly believe that saddling that kind of two-year dead money hit on a new GM who's supposed to be coming in here to fix things is a smart thing to do?
Plus, I go back to John Mara's comments that said his expectation is this team is going to be much better and competitive in 2018.
He said good.
Yeah.
The Giants, I think that we will be good.
So,
this year.
I mean, if that's the directive, then clearly you want some stability at quarterback under those circumstances. Unless you just feel that whoever the young quarterback is, that he could come in under center and from day one help you win football games, which would be, I think, a very quick turnaround in terms of the philosophy of the organization.
The odds of that are very remote.
Yes. When you take into all of the logical factors that we're trying to throw out here, highly unlikely that you see him being shipped off to Jacksonville.
Which is why trading back is the best thing they could do. Get the shopping cart load of picks. I know you've been on board with me.
I have.
This
I've been saying that since they got the number two pick.
Which is
I haven't
so
been
cool
against that.
Because I keep having trouble with John every time he sits in the chair on this one.
No, I'm not one that runs to, you know, and John has even admitted that we don't necessarily always see eye to eye, especially on this topic. I'm not one who believes that you have the number two pick, it's the only way to get a franchise quarterback, and you have to take a quarterback. Because you and I just went over, there's other ways to find your quarterback. So I'm not a believer that you're not going to get the number two pick, you're not going to be in this circumstance very often. You've got to be able to capitalize here. The class of quarterbacks also has to be worthy of you saying, I want to take one of them with the number two overall pick. And I'll even go this far. I am high on Baker Mayfield. I like Baker Mayfield, Paul. I think he is going to be a solid quarterback.
Okay.
Assuming that the system is right. I don't think Baker Mayfield right now is going to be a top five pick. So I could see if you can move down, you may be able to find him and have somebody or feel confident that he's going to be an answer under center, and you don't have to necessarily utilize your number two overall pick. So that also is another way to
go about
it.
He's going to have to be in the right situation for me.
No doubt.
I don't think he just goes anywhere and automatically is good.
No, well, I mean, it's like anything else. You put any quarterback in Cleveland, you have to say your prayers and take your vitamins. So, I mean, yes, the system, like anything, is a big part of quarterback success, but I like some of the intangibles that he has, I guess is my point.
I understand
that. If the system is right, I think he can be successful.
Wouldn't be my quarterback, but I understand that.
Listen, in terms of small stature, Drew Brees is a small guy. I understand he's not Baker Mayfield. That's not my point. But I don't want to hear Russell Wilson's a small guy.
Oh, I know.
I'm tired of this, you got to be 6'3 in order to be a quarterback in the National
Football
League. I don't buy that.
That's why there are 32 teams in the NFL, because every one of those coaches and every one of those GMs wants a different guy to fit their style of team.
Yeah.
There's not just one quarterback who is going to be perfect for all 32 teams, you know. Russell Wilson is perfect for what the Seattle Seahawks do. There are teams in this league that would not want a Russell Wilson type because of the kind of physical tools, and style of football that he plays. I would not want Russell Wilson for the New York Giants, okay? I just wouldn't. But Russell Wilson is perfect for the Seattle Seahawks.
Well, the one thing I will say is Russell
Wilson, Eli Manning is not perfect for the Seattle Seahawks.
Russell Wilson, though, does have the mobility to overcome offensive line issues, regardless of what the
system
is. So that can't be dismissed. I mean, there's value in that.
He also didn't read the Patriots' defense on the last play of the Super Bowl and threw a very, very foolish interception.
Well, so that's why. So now we're getting to the bottom. So this is why you're not a big fan of Russell Wilson, all because of that one play?
I don't think on that particular play he showed enough leadership and intelligence. I think he should have been smart enough to see what was going down
and
should not have thrown that.
That's fair criticism in terms of the experience of calling an audible or looking at the defense. I also think you got to give Brandon Browner a hell of a lot of credit for making a hell of a play.
Sure you do.
Let's not dismiss that. And then also I think some criticism could fall on the coaching staff in those circumstances to say you've got
one
of the most effective goal line running
backs. No question, but who had the ball in his hands?
The quarterback did.
The last guy who could have aborted that play and could have made sure that it did not happen badly was the quarterback. And it was in his hands. He saw it. He threw it. He's the last guy who could have aborted that play. There are other guys in this league who never would have made that throw, who would have either called an audible out of the play or thrown the ball into the third row and not even allowed the ball to be intercepted. Well, Eli would have done that.
And that goes back to the decision-making of the quarterback, which is a part of analyzing that play. With all of that being said, I'm still not downgrading Russell Wilson because of that one play.
He's a system quarterback. I'm sorry.
I think that's a little too harsh.
He's gotten better over the last 2 years, but he's a guy who there are many quarterbacks. Again, but this is about preference. I did not say Russell Wilson was not an effective NFL quarterback, but I think he's much more effective in certain situations than others. On my team, you know, there are people who would say they'd rather have Larry Bird. There are others who'd say they'd rather have Dr. J. You know, what do you want?
And I get that, but here's where I will say, with respect to this topic, I think you can make a case that just about every quarterback in the National Football League, Paul, is a product of the system that is run by that team. Because here's the thing, Paul, all of these other arguments are hypothetical. Meaning, and I'm going to use Eli Manning because we're talking about the Giants. Whenever I hear, well, if you put Eli Manning on this team, you put Eli Manning on this team, the team is automatically going to thrive. Yeah, Eli Manning's a solid quarterback, and probably more often than not, he has the intellect and the knowledge that he is going to succeed. But that's a hypothetical. You could say that about any quarterback. You put Tom Brady on any team, they're going to have success. They're all products of the current system that is in place, and that's why they're thriving.
Okay, winning quarterbacks, though, are symbiotic with where they are.
Exactly.
It's not just system, it's also environment. I've said this 100 times, maybe 1,000 times. Ben Roethlisberger would not have won here, and Eli would not have done as well in Pittsburgh.
Well, but once again, hypothetical.
Partly because of their attitudes, how they conduct themselves, the intangibles that go into it. Ben's in the right spot. Eli's in the right spot. If you had traded those guys straight up, I don't think they would have won 4 Super Bowl rings between them. I really don't. I really don't.
I mean, listen, once again, this is a hypothetical conversation.
I know it is.
I think Big Ben and Eli both have the intangibles that...
Let me just say this, though.
Yeah.
Johnny Manziel, Johnny Football, when he came out of Texas A&M, I thought he'd be an absolute zero and a bust in the NFL and said, anybody who drafts him, buyer beware, it's fool's gold. Don't touch this guy. I would never want him on my NFL roster. But there were a lot of people who insisted... Wow, look how mobile he is. Look how dynamic he is. Look at the great plays he makes. Got to have him. Okay, great. Great. How'd that work out for you?
Well, but see, with Manziel.
CFL is still waiting for him.
With Manziel, I'll take it a step further, Paul, because, see, the issue
there
with Manziel.
There are intangibles.
Well, this goes back to exactly the
intangibles.
Eli and Big Ben are the type of guys that, you know, based on their track record, they're going to be in the film room, and their preparation is going to be impeccable.
Ben also had Kleenex thin skin earlier in his career, and that would never have worked in New York. Never.
Okay, well, if you want to take that into consideration, you didn't bring that up earlier.
No,
so
but
I
said intangibles.
Well, I wasn't thinking about handling the media and all of those things. That's part of it. Rookie year, he still went to the playoffs, though, with that being
said.
But
it's part of it.
Yeah.
It's part of it.
But with the Manziel
point. And he had some off-the-field difficulties in Pittsburgh, too, which would have been blown up 50 times bigger if he was here.
Absolutely. And Eli probably has handled the media better than anybody we've seen in recent history, even in the biggest market, whether it be in the smallest market.
Ridiculous how well he's done with that stuff.
Yeah, he deserves an A-plus in that department. But your point about Manziel, the reason why I would be a little bit skeptical of him compared to other quarterbacks, if you want to play the hypothetical game, is because Manziel never showed that the desire to focus solely on football was there. Those other guys, regardless of some of their baggage, Paul, I would not doubt that when I need them to prepare for the week upcoming for an opponent, I'd have confidence that they'd be in the playbook and they'd be studying.
Did you like Ryan Leaf coming out?
Coming out of college?
I was dead set against him.
I like Peyton much better.
So did I.
But that doesn't mean that, you know, Ryan Leaf didn't have some intangibles and skill set.
Yeah, but he had intangibles that threw out a yellow flag.
Correct.
That he might implode.
Which goes back to the Manziel factor, the off-the-field issues, the desire to play
something
football.
Something you got to worry about with Baker Mayfield. There's a yellow flag there.
I would say that that's valid.
There's a yellow flag.
There is some validity that, but I don't know if there's validity in terms of the desire to play football. I think he differs there compared to Manziel, Paul. Because while you could point to the off-the-field incident that happened last offseason, I get it, when he had the run-in with the authorities. When the guy's on the football field, I see a guy that wants to win football games. And I see passion on the sideline because he wants to win. You know, you could say that the maturity needs to improve. I'm not going to deny that. But I don't see it the same way as Manziel. I see a guy that wants to win at all costs. And that's going to be part of the evaluation process.
Sure.
Certainly it is. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. Richie's on Long Island. Richie, what's happening?
Hey, guys, what's up? Nice to talk to you again.
Doing well, Richie. Glad to have you call in. What do you got for us?
No, it's, so my question was just about Gettleman, because when Reese was GM, I don't remember, did he ever do any contract extensions, like, in season or while a player was still in their, like, on the last year of their deal?
Extensions for
not
players.
Very often.
Yeah, not very often. I mean,
yeah, it didn't seem like it.
I mean, JPP got some new deals, but that was usually, you know, when he was set to be a free agent, not necessarily the year before.
Yeah, because I'm just looking at it towards, you know, like specifically for Landon Collins, and I don't know if Gettleman, while he was in Carolina, did he ever, you know?
Oh, he did. I can answer that for you right now, Richie. He locked up Cam and he locked up Luke Kuechly with two long-term extensions, and those are the cornerstones of the Carolina franchise. So, I mean, if you're concerned for that regard, I think there's ample evidence to show that he took care of his guys and he made sure to lock them up.
All right, that's good. That's good to know, especially when it comes to Collins, you know, since he's going to be in his last year of his deal now and next year, and definitely would want to see him with the franchise for, you know, his whole career. Now, when it comes to, free agency, I guess, I know the cap number is kind of fluid right now because we have no idea who's going to be cut or who's going to be signed, but as of right now, do the Giants stand in the positive or in the negative?
Well, in terms of the salary cap you're talking about?
Yes.
Well, I could go back to, Paul, when Kevin Abrams spoke to the media when he was interim GM. One of the questions he was asked at his presser is, if you did want to tackle free agency, what would the situation be like? And I don't have the exact quote, but I'm going to paraphrase. If we could find the exact quote, that'd be great. But he said something that the Giants are in a healthy position, Richie. That's what he indicated, and he did not think it would be an immense challenge if they did want to go out and sign some free agents, that it wouldn't require them to release about, you know, 10 or 15 guys.
Okay. Dick, I mean, well, the contracts that they gave out to, you know, the four defensive players, JPP, Vernon, Snacks, and Jenkins was just, you know, that's what my line of thinking was. I was like, well, they got to be pretty close, you know, but if, you know, he definitely knows, would know better than me if they're in a healthy situation. So that's good to hear.
What else you got for us?
Has there been is there like a specific date for when free agents are allowed to sign with the team? Is it like sometime in March?
Yeah, usually it's when the new league calendar begins. I'm not sure the exact date.
Second week of March.
Okay. Yeah, so second week in March is usually when free agency starts getting underway, and usually there's about a 3-day period where you can talk with free agents, and then on the fourth or fifth day you can officially sign contracts.
Okay. And, like, I think 20, 30 minutes ago, while you guys were talking, between if it was Kansas or Missouri, Missouri, I know, is the show me state.
There you go.
Okay.
Take that extra bet for 200, please.
All right. There you go, Richie.
Double jeopardy,
appreciate
baby.
That.
I like it.
Thanks for weighing in. All right, so we got clarification. We'll convince ourselves to throw Missouri off the list then.
Remind me to call you on phone a friend during Millionaire next week. Thank you, sir.
All right, Richie. Appreciate the phone call.
The question to Kevin Abrams on December the 14th was, how do you view the salary cap going forward? His answer, quote, we're healthy. We won't have any restrictions on what we can do based upon the salary cap. We have tough decisions. Like we have every offseason, but we don't have to make any decisions based because of the salary cap.
So there you go. So, I mean, that was what I recalled. Healthy is the key term, what he utilized.
Yeah. They should be able to make some maneuvers. They're not up against it, as we've talked about some years ago, not the last 2 years, but going back a few years. Remember, we kept talking about how they don't have a lot of room here to do stuff, and they were going to have to hit in the draft, and then they didn't. Then suddenly they had a lot of money under the cap, and they bought those three defensive players.
Or if you're Dave Gettleman, when you inherit in 2013 the Carolina situation and you're over the cap and you got to start cutting players. So Gettleman's had experience in far worse situations, I would say, based on what he's looking at here. Let's head back to lines. Tony's in California. Tony, welcome aboard. What do you got for us?
Yeah, hi, guys.
How we doing, Tony?
I realize it's the 11th of January. Well, I still wish you a happy new year.
Well, same to you.
You too.
Never late to wish us a happy new year. What do you got for us?
All right, so we've gotten off the second draft choice. I just want to ask a couple of questions, especially with Paulie there. In 14-15, you know, Manning had really super year. We had a great offense. we lost, I guess, Newhouse. He went to Oakland. And 16 and 17, our offense went down the pike. So what happened there? I mean, most of the line came back, and it got really terrible starting 16 and 17.
Well, they played in 2017, the season that just finished up, the Giants had 10 different starting combinations on the offensive line. 10.
Yeah, I understand that.
That's not good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Most teams are going to struggle.
The same problem in 16.
That's not good.
Injury,
well,
the ineffective of the line.
Well, here was the thing. In 16, all right, you had better wide receivers. The receiving core was significantly better than what it was this past year. For example, Odell Beckham was out in week 5 with a broken ankle. Okay? Brandon Marshall went out week 5, broken ankle.
Right.
Shepard missed a lot of time this season.
Shepard missed a lot of time.
Yeah.
I mean, back in the previous year, Shepard played the whole season. Beckham played the whole season. Victor Cruz played the whole season. He missed a game at the end of the year. He wasn't the same Victor Cruz, but he was more functional.
Well, you were healthier in terms of the receiving core.
He was
that's
more functional
than
guys you pulled off the street.
Yeah. Plus, you also did not play, to your point, Tony, you did not have 10 different offensive lines in terms of combinations in 2016. I know that Justin Pugh did miss a stretch of a few games, but it was solely one guy that was replacing him, which was Brett Jones. You didn't really have to worry about all of a sudden week to week now having 3 or 4 different offensive linemen come in. So that was a big difference too.
So that's right off the bat. That changes the whole thing. And then on top of that, I would have to be honest with you when I say this, and I mean it very, very strongly. Okay. Giants' game of field position this past year was dreadful. Their special teams, which was really good in that playoff season a couple of years ago, really was bad this year. And field position affects a lot of what you're doing.
Well, it's also a reflection of the defense. The defense put the offense in a great position in 16.
No question.
That was not the case in 17. So that you have to take into consideration when you're evaluating the drop-off on offense.
I mean, you know, we talk about this all the time, or at least I do, how this is a spider web game. It is a domino game. Everything is intertwined. That's why football is the greatest game in mankind's history, because there is so much involved. It's so complicated. It's so complex. You can't just take one toothpick and take it out of the equation and say, this is it. No, everything is intertwined. And so there's no easy answer to what you said. I hope we gave you some rationale that you're able to grip.
Yeah. I mean, I know, but I'm more interested in what happened between 15 and 16 besides the change in coaches. I wonder what Tom Coughlin would have done if Mara gave, Jerry all that money to go out and, you know, hire.
Well, I mean, of course, listen, we could stay here, Tony. And
what would Tom done in 16?
Well, we could have done the coulda, woulda, shoulda game all you want, but I mean, listen, the team went
11-5. Yeah, I'm just looking for your opinion.
Well, I understand that, Tony, but I'm saying the team went 11-5 in 2016. So it's not, to me, it's not a reasonable question. I think if Tom Coughlin was still here and he was given the same talent, you would assume that 11-5 is a reasonable finish for Tom Coughlin as well.
Just like I've said, if Vince Lombardi was coaching the team this year, I don't know that he would have gotten a whole lot more than 3 wins.
Yeah, I mean, so I don't think there'd be
really
a drastic change. Yeah.
You know, there was a lot wrong here this year. And, you know, that's just the way it is.
Your point's well taken. Okay, thanks, guys,
all right,
for
Tony.
Taking my call, and
be
have
good.
A great day.
You got
you too.
It. Appreciate the phone call. All right, let's head back to the lines. Jerry's in Boca. Jerry, what's happening?
Hey, good afternoon, Paul and Lance.
Hi.
I want to throw this out for your consideration, and I have to say, ultimately, I tend to agree with what you are looking at. I think that the Giants need to keep up the threat of picking a quarterback to enhance their bargaining position for the draft.
That's fair.
Absolutely.
But I hope that their strategy is that if in free agency they can put together a potentially strong offensive line, that it might be acceptable to pick a quarterback for the future. But if the offensive line is still a big question mark, it would be odds on better to trade for as many picks as possible, and then the deal is likely to be better if other teams think that the Giants are going for a quarterback.
No question.
Yeah, I think that's an extremely valid point. First of all, you want the rest of the league to feel as if you could go in a variety of different directions with that number 2 overall pick, because it only improves your value. Your point, though, about the offensive line, I just want to be a little cautious here. Let's say they go out and they revamp the offensive line. Okay, let's go under that premise.
They're going to have to. Dave Gettleman's already said it's a top priority.
So, but right now nothing's happened, so I'm going to say it's a hypothetical. Okay, but Jerry's point about the fact that if you have a great offensive line in place for 2018, makes you more comfortable taking a quarterback. When that quarterback is ready to take over, there's no guarantee that the offensive line is going to look the same as it was in 18. You don't know what the contracts are going to look like. Are we revamping the offensive line through free agency? Are we revamping the offensive line with first-round picks that are going to have 4 years left on their deal?
You know how I feel about taking a quarterback. If I'm revamping the offensive line, I might be taking Barkley.
But my point is the offensive line can change from 18 to 20.
You're missing my point.
Yeah.
The point is that we want to preserve the success of the team for the next year, and the only way that we can preserve the success of the team is with an offensive line, and we have to revamp it. And if you get enough free agents that make you comfortable after you've assessed it and you say, okay, well, then we can go ahead and now we can draft for the future and we can lay him aside and wait a couple of years. If you don't have an offensive line, you don't have a 2018 team.
Well, of course, listen, the team's only going to go so far as the O-line. I'm not disagreeing with any of that, Jerry. My point is you can't just react to what your team looks like in 18 and say, well, we're going to get the quarterback. We feel good about our line in 18. So when the kid takes over in 20 or 21, you may bring in two free agents. You brought up the Vikings as an example, Paul. That doesn't mean you're giving the two guys 5-6-year contracts.
No.
You may give them a 1 or 2 year deal with an option, and you may move on from them by the time the youngster is ready to take over his quarterback. So that's my point, that even if you fix up the offensive line, Jerry, to help your cause in 18, that doesn't necessarily mean it's an indication of what your team's going to look like in 20 or 21. That's what I was making the point.
I'm just looking for a reason to say we can go for a quarterback. I really do believe that the best chances the Giants have are to keep up the premise that they're possibly going for a quarterback and just make the best deal they can to get as many picks as they can.
Yeah.
That's their best option.
I agree. There's no question, Jerry. You're absolutely right.
Hi, Jerry.
Okay, well,
thank you.
Anyway, that's just what I wanted to add. Thanks a lot, guys.
And appreciate the phone call. I think that overall is a fair point. I mean, it's just like when people were wondering, you know, what would Gettleman reveal in his introductory presser? What do you think? He's going to say, oh, yeah, sure, we're going to trade Eli Manning. And make it apparent that they're going to go after a quarterback at number two. You want to keep all your options open.
Right before we go, addressing the offensive line, John and I talked about this yesterday. Given the guys who are still signed here, Flowers is still signed.
Yeah.
Brett Jones, he's restricted because of the years he's put into the league. Mm-hmm. So you know Brett Jones and Flowers are going to be two of the five starting offensive linemen.
Okay.
Richburg is a free agent.
Yep.
Pugh's a free agent.
Yep.
Fluker's a free agent.
Three guys who started.
Okay.
Yes.
So you may need to bring in three potential starters on that offensive line. It may be true. You may have to. You may not have a choice.
Well, and also, I mean, listen, I understand Flowers is under contract, but let's see what Gettleman thinks of him, too. I mean, the philosophy could change there as well.
Okay.
He has no ties to him.
We're just giving a hypothetical.
No, but I'm with you. I'm following you.
Two starters from this year who are still signed. That much is a fact.
That's fine.
Okay.
I'm with you. So three, that right now, three is a fact that could be gone. You could have three voids.
It's logical and reasonable to think you can have three new offensive linemen. Now, I don't care how it breaks down, whether you fill up two of those with free agents and one draft pick, like the Vikings did, or maybe it goes the other way. Maybe you use your second and third round picks on offensive linemen and you sign one free agent. You might get a second and third round guy. Remember, the Vikings center is a third round pick, and he started for them this year.
And Richburg also was a second round pick.
Yeah. And he started, he played guard. So, in theory, now, personally, I'm bringing back Fluke. But I don't know that that's going to happen. But if they bring back Flowers, Fluker, and Jones, then they've only got to get two new starting offensive linemen. It is doable. You can do that and rebuild this offensive line and have a playoff team next year, because that's the number one thing that's got to be done to make this team competitive again.
But I'm just getting back to my point is that you're looking at 18, and you have to look at 18. But when Jerry was talking about, you know, what a young quarterback could do with an O-line, we're still far away from what's going to happen beyond 18. That's what I was bringing up with that, because you said three voids, Paul. Okay, so what if two of the three are filled via free agency? how long are those free agent deals?
Well,
maybe I'm only giving the guys two-year deals,
point. I go back to after the 99 season when they signed Lomas Brown, Dusty Ziegler, and Glenn Parker. They signed three free agent offensive linemen in a heartbeat. Gettleman was the pro personnel director, okay? They replaced three offensive linemen in the offseason. In 2000, they went to the Super Bowl.
But how, I don't
know. In 2001, all three of those guys, Ziegler got hurt, Glenn Parker got old real fast. Lomas Brown got old real fast. And the offensive line crumbled. But you went to the Super Bowl in 2000.
Well, I'm not saying it's not worth it. Listen, you got to improve the O-line.
Fans right now, you're going to go to the Super Bowl this fall, coming up in 2018, but you'll probably stink in the next year or two after that. Would you not sign up for it? I would.
I mean, it depends on your – or would you – prefer the mindset of a team that's going to be in the playoff hunt every single year?
I'm just asking because I
think there's value to that too.
And so, but that goes into how long do you sign the guys for? How old are the guys who you sign? That all goes into account there. You know, if the Giants can pull off what they did in 2018, I'm all for it. That's what I'm saying.
And that's going to be part of Gettleman's rationale
right.
And how he tries to rebuild the O-line and other parts of this team. But that's why we're, you know, going over the pros and cons, because there are pros and cons when you make those types of decisions.
No question.
That is going to wrap up our program today. Certainly appreciate all the phone calls. We will try to look at some tweets that came in a little bit late and try to address them off the air, but certainly appreciate those of you who interact on social media. Big Blue Kickoff Live back up and running tomorrow at noon Eastern, as well as the entire offseason. But there is no program next Monday on MLK Day, so we're only going to have shows from Tuesday to Friday next week. Just wanted to throw it out there. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday here on Giants.com. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. We'll speak to you tomorrow on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Have a good one.